Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This is Internet Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast brought to you by Site Visibility. Today, we're talking about successfully managing the biggest migration in Denham's history, and that's with Jamie Watson, Senior SEO Manager, SEO Marketing Manager at Dunelm, and Marcos Alvarez Martin, Senior SEO Analyst here at Site Visibility. You might have heard him a few episodes ago. So what I wanted to do with migrations, and we've covered migrations on the podcast in the past, and Marcos himself has recently hosted a webinar, 60 Minutes to Migration Success, and we've got tons of content on our website about migrations. But I don't think we've ever covered it from the angle of having a kind of client perspective on it and the agency perspective. And though there's the common goal of essentially ensuring that traffic and users and conversions aren't affected, there are kind of all of those hidden goals, hidden objectives, hidden obstacles, both agency side and client side, that I really wanted to explore today. So, Jamie, thanks so much for taking the time for coming on the podcast today. And Marcos, thanks for taking the time out again to appear here. I'm going to start with you, Jamie, and kind of ask you to set the scene as much as you can remember. I know it's been a while now, but as much as you can remember from the context of coming into this last migration. So could you maybe just speak on a little bit? What was the tone? What was the scene? What was the mood in the company coming up to this last migration?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the focal point for this migration was a previous migration, actually, that happened shortly after I joined the business back in 2014 or 15, I think. And that one didn't go particularly well, to be fair. It was a very different situation to the more recent one that we're talking about now. Essentially, it was a domain change as well as a platform migration. The URL structures entirely changed. Lots of content was changed all in one. Basically, everything that could be changed was in one big bang. And needless to say, it didn't go particularly well. So that was kind of in everybody's mind coming into this one, I think.
That makes sense. Like, yeah. Having a previously difficult experience, and particularly with migrations, it makes you all the more nervous about the next one.
Yeah.
Was that something that you felt as well as some of the other kind of your peers in the company?
Oh, absolutely. I think migrations are always going to make people working in SEO a little bit nervous. to put it lightly. So having seen what had happened before, it was really, it was really important for myself personally and obviously for the rest of the business that we got it right. But it kind of worked in our favor because having had that previous experience, we were able to sort of demonstrate quite clearly what can happen when things don't go right. And if you don't put SEO at the forefront of what we were trying to achieve with the migration, and that's what had happened previously. SEO was almost an afterthought, whereas coming into this one, we absolutely had the support from the entire business, which was great to really put SEO front and center.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess one blessing or one positive that you can take from a poor migration is the lessons that you learn from it for the next one. Particularly if you're lucky enough to be in the same company for a long enough time to see the next one through.
Yeah.
You don't have to kind of talk about numbers that maybe you're not allowed to talk about or uncomfortable with, but you did touch on the previous migration had it was poor. In terms of metrics, are we talking loss in traffic, loss in revenue? And maybe can you give me a range of how much you were experiencing after the first few months for the previous migration?
Just
to set the context.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, essentially, we were running at a really – it was frustrating at the time as well because we'd recently seen some really huge growth in our sort of organic metrics. And we were running at the highest point we ever had. And literally overnight from that migration, we pretty much halved our visibility.
Oh, wow.
Lost huge amounts of, strong ranking positions. Needless to say, that had a huge impact on traffic and revenue as well. And we kind of, with a migration, you kind of expect that you're going to see a bit of flux, you're going to see a bit of a drop, and then we kind of anticipated that we would see an improvement. But with the previous one, we halved our visibility and pretty much stayed like that for a long time, despite a lot of work to revive it. So the impact was huge on the business.
Yeah. Definitely. If anyone, it doesn't matter the size of your website, if your visibility is halved, regardless of whatever visibility metric you're using, that's never a good thing.
So
just before we go into some of the finer details of kind of how you guys work together and actually individually on planning the next migration, can you just explain the decision, what kind of migration it was within the business and why you had decided to migrate? I think that's always interesting to people in marketing as well. Kind of what was the trigger for this next migration?
Sure. Yeah. So primarily it was a platform migration. So previously we were on a standard sort of out-of-the-box e-com platform, and we wanted to move to something much more bespoke. And so the business took the decision to build the platform completely in-house, essentially. And I think that's for a lot of reasons, really. We'd kind of outgrown the previous one in a pretty short space of time, and we could tell that because we were constantly sort of hacking it around in order to make it work. Lots of processes that were kind of baked into the previous platform were difficult and time consuming. It was very hard to progress, really,
The reason I asked that question actually was because just having hear you talk about it is that there are different as listeners of this podcast know, and anyone that's downloaded the content from our website, there are different types of migration. So sometimes it's just domain, sometimes it's platform, sometimes people use the phrase migration for just kind of slight rebranding on a website. But going through an entire platform migration is an entirely different beast, because it's, yes, you have the SEO considerations and many of them, and some of them which will be unexpected, but it impacts in a company like Dunelm every department, because everyone's got, I guess, new ways to use the website, new ways in which users are going to use the website, and considerations that go far beyond SEO, which make it all the more challenging, I suspect.
Absolutely. Yeah, like you say, there isn't really a part of the business that doesn't get impacted by this. Certainly from anyone that works on the website side of things, every process has to be kind of reviewed and changed, and it was all for the best. Like I say, I think we'd got to a point where we could clearly see where we wanted to be in a few years' time. And it just wasn't going to be possible on that old platform. So yeah, completely built in house, and a lot of time and effort and work went into to getting there. The other thing that's quite interesting from the SEO side was that we moved to a single page application as well. So that was quite a little bit daunting actually at first for myself, just because it was something I'd sort of read about, but I didn't know an awful lot about, and just didn't seem to be very good for SEO, I guess, was my first thoughts about it. But obviously tons of other benefits to it. And this was the whole thing around the migration. You know, I'm looking at it purely from an SEO side, but there's tons more considerations that have to be made, and other people that need to have their input.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that you made about the single page application, because as we talk through this particular, I guess, case study or experience of this migration, we'll find at the end that, you know, there were plenty of successes that came from it. Mm-hmm. And so although single page applications are daunting, particularly if you haven't been learning them or your current website isn't utilizing or isn't a single page application, mm-hmm. It can still be a success is the key message that I'll kind of take from that part. It just it comes onto the part we're talking about next. It's just with planning. You're given this message, I assume, that there's the platform migration. You then start to be involved in the internal discussions. For you, Jamie, what are some of the first things that come to mind in terms of, are there any clear-cut mistakes that you think you made in the previous migration that you wanted to avoid in the next one? Or was it just a case of you approaching it completely differently? What was your approach? What did you want to avoid, and what did you want to do differently?
So personally, I mean, I wasn't as involved with the previous one as I wanted to be or should have been. I think it was the horse had already bolted by the time I'd got there, so it was going to happen regardless. And I think the biggest thing for me, and the thing I think that hurt us the most previously, was just the amount of change that happened in one go. I think Google and search engines just couldn't cope with it, really. So I really wanted to keep that sort of scale of change down to a minimum. So the plan for me was always that I wanted Google to be crawling and indexing our pages and seeing our site one way the day before launch, and after we'd hit the button, I wanted it to come back and see that the site had essentially changed underneath, but that, you know, the URLs were exactly as they were before, so we didn't hit any sort of indexing issues or crawling issues around that. That there weren't like parts of the site that were blocked that are now open, and we saw a lot of over-indexing issues previously, for example. Mm. You know, I wanted to keep as much content the same, and you know, this is all stuff that we want to improve and make the most of going forward. But at that point, I think my message to the business was really just, let's just keep as much as we can from one point to the next static, essentially.
And Marcos, bringing you into the conversation at this point, so you get word from the client that there's going to be a migration. Typically, that's one of the first things that's said. You know, we're planning on migrating. And I don't know in this scenario the level of detail that you got initially. But maybe can you speak on more generally, what are you looking for from a client when they say that there's going to be a migration? What are the first things that cross your mind?
Hi. So for me, the first things that I will consider when a client tells me that they're going to migrate is, how is SEO going to be involved in that migration? Because often many developers think that the migration is just developing the new website, finish on Friday and launch it on Monday. And then on that short time, the SEO has to work their magic, sprinkle the SEO bits on top of the website, and that's it. And that's not how migration works. And with Dynamo, it was really good, because from the beginning, they understood the implications for SEO, for their organic rankings, their organic traffic. And we were involved from the early stages of the migration, when they were discussing how to structure the website, when they were discussing the things that were going to change compared to the old website. I did a mini training with the development team explaining how search engines work and how search engines crawl and index websites. So that understanding probably came from the previous migration that Jamie was referring. But it was that's the main thing. They need to understand that SEO doesn't come at the end. SEO is part of the process. And with Denham, they understood that from the beginning. And I think that was one of the keys of the success of this migration.
There you go. You heard it from Marcos himself. It's, you know, if you're listening and maybe you're in a development team or maybe you're a business owner looking to migrate, you know, SEO isn't the thing that you bolt on at the end. That is a horrible experience if you're positioned in that position as an agency, because you ultimately just can't do your best job. So make sure that it's a part of the process from the moment that migration starts to cross your mind. Think about how are we going to make sure that organic search doesn't suffer, and actually that it benefits during a migration. On the flip side of that point, Jamie, I guess, so again, word makes its way to you. You're involved in those discussions about a migration to a new platform. What are you then looking for from an agency? What are the first things that cross your mind in terms of support from Marcos and the team at Site Visibility?
Well, like Marcos said, you know, getting people like Marcos involved at the earliest stage and able to go in front of lots of other stakeholders in the business, I think was a really important bit, and really hammer home the message of the importance. Okay, we all kind of knew the importance anyway, but building those relationships and having people that you trust, that you work with, such as the guys, the whole team at SiteViz, just able to reach out to other people in the business and talk to them, you know, openly about what things we would and wouldn't like to see from an SEO side, and get involved with those discussions was really important for me. And I think just having people that you know their stuff, you know, and being able to pick up the phone whenever. I mean, this migration went on, you know, the lead up to it, the time we spent creating it, and essentially, you know, I think I was working on it for a good 2 years before we actually launched. So you need people that you trust, really, and that you know that you can rely on. So, you know, we were lucky that we'd worked with you guys already for a little while. We knew you guys anyway, so that came pretty naturally for us.
Yeah, I remember that our side, one of the key things and that one of the key messages, because we were expecting the nervousness around the migration, because I think you had just joined us post-migration with a previous company, and just I think it maybe was 6 months to a year before before you had joined us. And so we remember one of the first things you talking to us about was migrations. And then this one came along and we were like, okay, so we know that they had a horrible experience before. So it was really our goal to change that. And it's funny, one of my questions was going to be, and it's crazy how time flies, but one of my questions was going to be, how long did this planning process take before you launch? And you've just mentioned that it was about 2 years. So it goes to show, just for anyone out there that's listening, that, you know, it's not going to be the case for every website that it's going to take that long. Dunelm is a very special case with many, many considerations to get right and lots at stake if it goes wrong. But it does highlight that if you are a kind of an e-commerce company, a retailer, high profile, lots of departments, it can take that long. But not only can it take that long, it's worthwhile taking the time to get it right.
If I can say something here.
Go for it. Yeah.
It also shows how SEO was involved since the beginning. Because what they were doing at the beginning, 2 years before launch, was starting to discuss how the new website is going to look. And SEO was involved in those conversations. And when they were starting to consider how the structure of the website will look, how the faceted navigation will look, SEO was involved in those conversations. So even if we didn't have a website to crawl and to start doing checks in there, we were involved in those conversations. And that's why it took that long. It wasn't like hardcore work from the beginning. Mm. It was just meeting and working together and having those conversations that needed to happen before starting building the website.
No, that's such an important point as well. And yeah, another reason why you want to put SEO from the forefront at the start, particularly if you're going to be, you know, you're going to be planning for a long period. Jamie, it's actually just something I want to come back to that you mentioned, which I think is a really important point as well. And I'm curious about actually two points. One that you mentioned, which was trust. Again, there's no way to, you have to be working with an agency for a while, and you know, trust can't be forced. So trust goes a long way with the migration. So that's something that stood out to me that makes migrations a lot easier. It's kind of irreplaceable. And the stakeholder conversation actually was really interesting. Is there anything you both remember that might have been a good trigger where you thought, the stakeholders, the senior figures in this company have really paid attention to this point? Was there any kind of turning point, anything that you did differently or anything that you just did for this migration that you thought, that resonated with them?
I think one thing I did quite early on, which seemed to help, and did it with the support of Marcos and the simple list of requirements. So this is one of the very first things I did, 2 years before we sort of launched. So with this case, we're building everything from scratch. So essentially, if we're not saying what we want and how we want it to work, then it's probably not going to get looked at, or it's not going to get done properly, should we say. I started making this list of requirements from every, basic stuff that you would kind of take for granted, just being able to set up redirects or to, have a sitemap that's created and starting from the very basics. And this list, as you can imagine, just grew and grew and grew. And pretty quickly we had our sort of SEO requirements that we used as really the backbone of the work going forward. And I think having done that early, we could then show the rest of the business that, look, we not only do we need to take this seriously because of we know what can happen when it goes wrong, but we've got a lot of work to do that spreads over so many different departments within the business, and that was a real valuable tool and something that I could use to show to the stakeholders.
Oh, brilliant. No, that's a really interesting answer. So thanks for that, Jamie. It's really good advice for anyone out there that's kind of, I guess, one part of a migration that's always difficult. We talked about, obviously, I guess we've made the point, to consider SEO from the start, but we haven't really talked about how can you do that, particularly in companies where you do have to kind of present or make that point to other people in the business. So that's really, really interesting. This next question that I'm going to cover is I imagine going to be quite difficult for you both, just through memory. And like you said, the amount of time that the migration has spanned. But could you maybe, and this is a question to either of you, I guess very shortly after, within the initial 3 to 6 months after the migration, after knowing that the migration was on the horizon, what planning did you start to put in place? So, was this just conversations at this stage? Did you start with any documentation, checklists, any specific focal points of the migration? Either of you have any memories from that part?
Yeah. I think we had I'm sure we had a checklist that we use for all the migrations that we do at Site Visibility. Oh. But this one in particular, because it was bigger and we were involved since the beginning, it had to include more different elements, and it had to include the learnings that Danone had from previous migrations. So we presented this checklist with pre-migration planning, launch day planning, and post-migration or post-launch activities. And we take that to the Danone, and we sat with Jamie, and we discussed what else do we need for this. And we discussed how we envision this migration happening. So we already had the skeleton of the plan that we were going to put in place for the migration.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Looking back at those planning items from that early stage and kind of the eventual results, what do you think helped most in terms of your early stage planning? What do you think it was that helped this one go smoother?
I will say either the meetings with the developers the auditing that we had in place. We have a strange way of auditing the staging site because we continue auditing while they were building. So at the end, when we were close to launch, I was very familiar with the new website, very familiar with how the different elements work because I have already audited them before. And we were aware that those audits were not going to be definitive. We were aware that they were still working, but it just helped us to be aware of issues before they even happened.
Okay, that's a really interesting point. So I get there's two points there actually, Marcos, that stand out. So early stage access to the development site or the staging site, number one. And then also it seems like, because this doesn't always happen, but a direct contact and relationship with the developers that were working on the project.
Yeah,
I would totally agree with both of those. I think teaming up, linking up the dev guys with the agency was so important. It gave us all in the business a lot of peace of mind that the right things were happening at the right times and the right information was getting to the right people. And yeah, having the beta site as well, so the allowing Marcos and the team into essentially the skeleton frame of what the new site was going to be at a really early point, again, just for peace of mind and to see that things were going on track was, gave everyone a lot of confidence.
Yeah, actually thinking it through and going back to a previous point, one thing that stands out to me, I was thinking to myself as you were talking then, you know, why doesn't this happen for all migrations? Because it makes sense to get direct access to developers and to have access to, you know, whether it's development sites, staging sites, beta sites, whatever system you're working with, it just makes sense to give your agency or, you know, SEO professionals that you're working with access to those sites. The reason it doesn't always happen, from at least my perspective, sometimes is that I could be wrong on this. I'd love to maybe grab a developer or in the future and get them on the show to talk from their angle on this, but we've definitely crossed paths with development teams and development agencies in the past at Site Visibility who are reluctant to get the SEO agency involved through the fear of prolonging a project. So, you know, the SEO people come in, they say, change this, change that. And the development team just want to focus on, you know, typically whether it's the design, development or functionality of a website. And so the SEO is seen as the part that is kind of inconvenient. But obviously we're speaking broader as a business here about the importance of for organic search and a big site like Dunelm. If you do go that route and you do kind of ignore SEO as part of the process, it can have massive ramifications. So yeah, I mean, the biggest piece of advice that stands out from what you both just said is give your agency or give your SEO team early access and that can make communication a whole lot easier. And it sounds like, on the flip side, you've got to have a willing development team, and it sounds like you've got that at Dunelm as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Very, you know, lucky in that sense that there wasn't. You touched on it then. There's sometimes a bit of sort of friction, I guess, or maybe lack of understanding of what we're all trying to achieve. But the point is, we're all kind of trying to achieve the same thing, right? So it doesn't
exactly.
It shouldn't really sit separately. It's just getting that SEO view of things kind of baked in as early as possible.
Okay, so I mean, we've talked a lot about planning. But at some point in time, you have to launch the thing. And so could you explain to me, and this is a question for you both again, your respective roles on launch day? So you launch, what systems do you have in place and what are you both looking out for? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think you were both together on launch day. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. So many nightmares going into launch day, right? Yeah. I remember speaking with Damien and not being able to sleep.
I was going to say, Markov's main role was just to calm me down and make sure I was okay.
Yeah, so Markov was in a supportive role. I meant, yeah, a therapy role. So Markov, you didn't sleep, but what did you do on the first day of launch?
So we both were in London. We both were in the Dynamics offices, Jamie and I. And we were in there for 3 days. We stayed in London for 3 days before launch, just to make sure that everything was in place. It was three hectic days, but very satisfying when you look back, because we were working hand to hand with the developers, with other teams that I haven't met before. Because apart from developers, there were so many other stakeholders. So we were like doing a bit of everything those days. I don't think that we had like specific roles, each of us. We were just testing the staging site, updating the redirect map, making sure the sitemap was correct, crawling here, crawling there, having conversation with the developers, a lot of awkward conversations the day before launch. So it was a bit crazy, but there was a lot of hard work and teamwork in there. So it was good at the end. I don't know, what do you think, Jamie?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. It was, I mean, it's all a bit of a blur for me now, to be honest, but we, like you say, a lot of last minute checks, I think. We had a pretty solid checklist of things we wanted to do. There was, a few times where we spotted last minute things we weren't quite sure about or hadn't seen at that point, because, I mean, the development teams were working right up to the wire, really. So there are a few last hurdles to jump, but luckily nothing that sort of stopped us from launching. So yeah, I guess our roles really on the day were just to keep our eyes on everything that we could and act as a sort of early warning system if anything seemed out of place.
What sort of metric? A couple of questions here for you both. What tools were you using? I think that's always interesting. What tools were your saviors and your best friends at this time? And what metrics were you looking at or within those tools or just in general on launch day and around launch time?
So from my side, from the day that we launched, I'd built a daily tracker, I called it, which pulled in lots of different metrics from different tools that we use. So one tool in particular that was really helpful for me was Pi Data Metrics. Shout out to those guys, because that tool, in my opinion, is pretty impressive. And the good thing that gave us was a daily view, a daily sort of snapshot of our ranking positions and visibility. And we can create our own sort of Dunham's a very sort of category-based company, so we often track every individual category as well as the whole, so we were able to do that at a keyword level and on a daily basis, which was really, really helpful just in telling the story back to the business of how we feel the migration was going and those first sort of couple of weeks, the impact that it was having. So that was really good. And then I'm sure Markov used a lot of other tools as well.
Yeah, I was more focused on the technical elements. So Screaming Frog was my best friend during those days.
Yeah.
And I even had Paul Hesketh, our account director, testing canonical tags in Screaming Frog. on the day before launch. I used Screaming Frog, I used Deep Crawl, and I was more focused on the actual state of the website, because I knew that Jamie had an eye on the other metrics in terms of traffic and revenue and all those things. So I just wanted to make sure that what was on the site on the launch date was visible, that it was fast, that it was usable, and that there was no technical issue, and that all the redirects were in place. And again, I checked those with Screaming Frog.
You've actually just touched on, as you were talking there, Marcos, I can't remember the phrase you used, but you said kind of visible. So I guess then we're talking, because there are always those embarrassing things. I guess you talked about not being able to sleep. There are those nightmare scenarios that play out in your mind. And the very first one is that you've got the site de-indexed. And so I guess you're looking out for no index tags is number one. You've just talked about canonical tags there. So you're looking out for those. Are there any other things that come to mind that you're kind of really looking out for? You're like, oh, that cannot go wrong. Yeah, I think you mentioned page speed there.
Robots.txt, making sure that the robots.txt plays. What else? I think you touched on the main things. We also had a specific Google Search Console account for the beta site, and we allowed access to Google to the beta site, which was a bit scary because we didn't know what was going to happen. But luckily, Google was able to see some pages. We were able to see how Google was seeing those pages before we even launched it. A lot of testing, a lot of different tools. Mm. I have mentioned Screaming Frog, Deep Crawl, Google Search Console. Those were the main ones for me.
Mm-hmm. And when you were finding issues, whether it was kind of usability issues or SEO issues on launch day, where did you communicate those to? Were they in some kind of platform, some software? Are we talking a massive Excel spreadsheet?
We had a shared document where we're putting any issues that we found. And even before we launched, we knew what type of issues we were going to find, because we have already audited the website so many times. We have already been working on it for so long. And we were aware that there were going to be issues when we launched, but we were able to minimize those issues, and we were able to identify them before they even happened on the live site.
Yeah. Jamie, was there, before we move on to kind of post-launch and the results of this migration, was there, outside of SEO for your customers and just the users of your website, were there any, was there any communication in place to customers about what they might expect on the website post-launch?
There was, but we didn't make a big song and dance about it, really. We knew that the site would look a little different, but it wasn't a complete redesign and rebrand. So we didn't feel we needed to say an awful lot directly to our customers. We did, as Marcos touched on, we gave... One of the things I think really helped us, actually, was we had our beta site. So the site was essentially built on a separate domain, and we actually started sending small amounts of paid traffic to the beta site rather than our main Dunelm site to understand how customers reacted on the site, really. And we did put messaging around, you know, if a customer, I think it was, we're talking very, very small percentage of customers that would land on a beta site or on a beta page. And we did communicate then that, you know, you are on a beta site. If you want to go back to the normal one, click here, kind of thing. That gave us really interesting insight, actually, just around, you know, all the metrics that you'd expect to look at, bounce rates and engagement rates.
Okay. And so, the site's launched, you've gone through your testing, and then eventually there comes a day where it's not launched anymore, and you're in post-launch kind of mode from there. For you, Jamie, just from the client side, what questions are you being asked by stakeholders? What are you monitoring post-launch, and how long are you monitoring? What are you looking out for in the months post-launch?
So I guess the main things that I'm being asked really around those top level metrics that matter most to the business, you know, around traffic and conversion rate, and that tracker that I built that gave us a daily view of it really helped to communicate that. I think the other thing that I was always asked was how long the impact of the migration was going to last. You know, I'd been quite clear that even, you know, best case scenario, I think we're going to see a bit of probably a drop in visibility or some impact on traffic and revenue. So I was kind of constantly asked how long that would be. And I'm sure anyone working in SEO can sort of sympathize. It's always a difficult question to answer. But, you know, based on advice from Marcos and the team and, you know, from my own experience and just looking around, we gave ourselves a kind of 12-week window from launch to bounce back, if you like, to come back to our previous levels of traffic and revenue, etc. So that was the answer we gave from that. That was our aim, if you like.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think with a site of your size, but also just in general, 3 months is a good benchmark to give yourself to know. After 3 months, you can pretty much tell the signs are there, whether things have gone right or wrong from a top level. And then the hardest part, as you said, is, and that's a really difficult question to answer, maybe it isn't, I guess we'll get to this, but how long do the effects of a migration last and how can you truly know when you're through it? But I guess thinking back to our earlier conversation is that, you're never really through a migration because there's, you were talking previously about coming into this migration, you still had lessons to learn from the previous one. So there's always carryover. There's always stuff that, you know, is never going to be 100%. And at some point, migration activity becomes your business as usual activity. It becomes your daily plan. It becomes your technical roadmap and just things to sort for the future. So, yeah, I mean, just my recommendation from what it sounds like for working on a site of your side that, you know, there aren't going to be too many sites bigger than yours, for our listeners, is that, 3 months is a good benchmark to give yourself to know whether things have gone, you know, drastically right or wrong. But beyond that, don't pressure yourself or your SEO professionals to on the question of how long will this migration activity last, because there are always elements of a migration that will just move gradually into your technical roadmap and become the plan for the future. And actually, on that note, were there any surprises post-launch, things that you just, despite your planning, you maybe hadn't covered, hadn't realized that became part of your technical roadmap to fix in the future? Anything that stands out?
No, I'm struggling.
If not, that's fine. That means there's some really thorough planning there. I was just really curious. Marcos also alluded to a moment ago. He said there was an interesting discussion with the developers the day before launch, and I wondered if that made its way into the kind of future plans.
No, not exactly. I mean, we were aware of the weaknesses of the new platform, and we have already considered those to be part of the future SEO roadmap. The conversations the day before launch were about internal redirects and navigation and things like that. But it was just business as usual.
Yeah.
Okay. So Marcos, Jamie's talked about some of his, I guess, his daily tracker and the top level figures that he's reporting on. But for those 3 months post-migration, can you speak a little bit on, I guess, what you're doing on a daily or weekly basis in those 3 months?
Yeah, I have a very similar daily tracker. I think that Jamie was more focused in business results. I was more focused in the state of the website. I was looking at indexation, how Googlebot was accessing the website. I was looking doing weekly crawls to make sure that everything was still there, making sure that redirects were still there, because sometimes by doing maintenance after the migration, you can break something else. But that wasn't the case. Indexation was good, apart from the usual fluctuation the days after the launch. And just making sure that everything was still working as expected.
And so in terms of everything working as expected, moving on to the results of this migration. I'm going to ask you, Jamie, again, whatever you're kind of comfortable and can share from the business. But what were the results after that 3-month period? What are you reporting on to the rest of your business? And ultimately, why was it deemed a success?
Well, I mean, I think the first point was that showed that it was a success was that 12-week period just wasn't, we didn't need anywhere near that amount of time to recover. I mean, we saw the sort of expected drop in our visibility, but it was pretty small compared to what we'd mapped out as sort of a good, bad, and ugly view of what could happen, you know. And we exceeded expectations massively in that. And I think within 4 weeks, I think I'm right in saying, Marcos, we'd already got back to pretty much where we were in terms of visibility. And what the great thing was is that things like conversion rate and the revenue particularly was actually almost overnight improved. I think we had a couple of weeks where it was a bit touch and go, but the site was clearly performing a lot better than the old one. And, it kind of justified all the work that everyone had put into it almost straight away because it was just, a lot better.
And I guess, Marcos, from you in terms of you've probably been through good and bad migration. I know actually before we pressed record today, you were talking to me about some struggles with a current migration that you're working on. So you've been through it all with migrations. This seems to be a standout one in terms of your career today, of one that you enjoyed and the best results in terms of migration.
Yeah,
that you worked
it was
on.
Probably the most complicated migration in terms of the size, in terms of the changes that they were making. Instead of creating a new website from scratch. But it was also the best planning that we have ever done. And it was also the best results. So although it was stressful on the weeks leading to the launch of a new website, it was also very satisfying. And I was very happy with the results. I'm very happy seeing that the guys at the Now understood where we were coming from. And they were happy with the results as well. So overall, very happy.
A question for both of you, just in closing on today's podcast, having been through such a thorough process, having talked and planned extensively for such a long time, I appreciate this is difficult, but going into your next migrations, what lessons did you take from this one, which you're going to apply to the future to make the next migration in your career even better? I guess starting with you, Marcos.
So what I will say to any SEOs that are listening is to help your clients, help developers understand where SEO is coming from and to help them understand how SEO can be impacted by a bad migration and how SEO can help boosting a website after a migration. Because you need to be confident in telling them that SEO needs to be involved from the beginning and that there needs to be some space, some time between the finishing of the staging side or of the new website and the launch. Because the SEO does not only have to test the website while it's being created, but then there also needs to be a space of time where we just test the website. So the website is completed and we just need to jump in, test it, try it, make sure that it works as expected before launch.
And yeah, likewise for yourself, Jamie, what lessons are you taking into your next migration?
I mean, the whole thing was just a huge lesson, really. I think working on anything like that, there's so much of it that I will carry on, and I think has given me a lot of experience in how to manage a project like this from an SEO side. There's always going to be things that you look back on and think, oh, maybe we could have done that or put more time into it. But again, you know, there's not a lot here that I would change, which is testament to I think the people I've worked with, you know, Marcos and the team, but also the business. I think, anyone going into this process, I think if you can get the backing of your the people around you and communicate the importance of getting things right first time and not, as we've said, not having SEO as an afterthought, then you're already on the right track, I think, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. That's a great closing message, Jamie, so thanks for that. Before I wrap up, I'm just going to, if there's anywhere people can connect with you, Marcos, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Site Visibility website. You go to the team page and I'll be there. My email address is marcos.martin@sitevisibility.com. You can also find me in Twitter and LinkedIn as Marcos Alvarez Martin.
And for you, Jamie?
You can find me on LinkedIn or drop me an email if anyone had any questions around any of this stuff, jamie.watson@dunelm.com. I'd say usually you could find me in the pub, but obviously lockdown, we're not... although we've only got a few days left until we can again. So
By the time it's launched, Jamie will be in the pub.
He knows me well.
Yeah. For our listeners, you can find all the show notes at sitevisibility.co.uk. If you're looking for an agency for support with your migration, obviously message us. And I don't know, if you're an SEO professional, a business owner, you're going through a migration, or you know someone that is, listen to this episode. There's some key lessons here, some of which I'll outline in the show notes, but hopefully that's given you a really good insight into what it's some of the successes and struggles in managing a huge migration for one of the UK's biggest retailers. Jamie, Marcos, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experience with us. And look forward to the next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.